be seated, please. Justice Resnick is not able to participate in the oral arguments that we're holding today, but she's read the briefs and she will have access to the taped oral arguments, and so she will be participating in the decisions. The first case is 00216, Northwestern Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council versus James Conrad Administrator. Mr. Dalling.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Chris Dalling, Acting Special Counsel to the Attorney General, on behalf of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, James Conrad, Mr. Chief Justice, I would like to reserve 2 minutes of my time.
Okay, watch your time there on the clock.
We are before you today, subsequent to this court's decision in the Halen matter, on a question once again challenging the constitutionality of the health partnership program. Specifically, the question that challenges the constitutionality is the payment method. And can payments be made from the state insurance fund to the MCOs for the medical management services they provide? It is the position of the Bureau that there is statutory case law as well as historical practice support for payments from the state insurance fund to the MCOs. If I address the case law issue, which has been set forth in the briefs, the Thompson case, we believe, is the leading case that, from the Ohio Supreme Court in 1982, which addressed an issue similar to the one before the court today. In the Thompson case, there was a standard developed in that decision in which the court held that programs, which are an integral component of the workers' compensation system, may be paid out of the state insurance fund.
Counsel, what program was that in terms of? There seems to be a dispute that the 10th District concluded that the container corporation versus Dickerson is still a controlling law. So what exactly has been paid for?
In the Thompson case, these were payments to the DWARF fund, the Disabled Worker Relief Fund.
So that would be, and that fund is paid directly to injured employees, is
that? That would be correct, yes.
So it was not an administrative cost?
No, but you're exactly right, Justice Piper. But what I would say is, what MCOs do is not an administrative cost. And there has never, where I believe the 10th District went wrong was that they labeled what an MCO does as administrative without ever doing the Thompson analysis as to whether the program, the MCO program, is an integral component of the workers' compensation system and therefore able to be paid out of the state insurance fund.
Well, how do you label them? Is cost containment and incentives not your label?
The services they provide, cost containment, they get paid for performance incentives, but what has to be done is an analysis of what they do, and what they do is not administrative.
Let's just stop with the terminology.
Okay.
Your terminology is cost containment and incentives, isn't it?
They do medical management, cost containment, and then they can get a performance incentive payment as part of the services they provide for efficiencies, getting workers back to work sooner.
But isn't that what the Bureau calls them? We're going to give you an incentive to do something, and we're applying these payments for cost containment. Isn't that what the Bureau calls them?
There are references to those terms, but yes.
Fine, okay. Now, do you agree that the prevailing law for getting the constitutional issue is .30 of the Code 4123.30?
I believe that 4123 would be statutory authority for the payments, yes.
.30. Okay. Now, will you tell me?
As well as 4121.401, I'm sorry.
Well, let's start with 30.
Okay.
Would you tell me in 30 which words would comport with cost containment and incentives. It says payment of compensation. Certainly compensation means to an injured party. Medical services, examinations, not an examination, recommendations and determinations, nursing and hospital care. Where do we find incentives or cost containment? You know, how, why did you think the Court of Appeals went so wrong in simply the statutory construction?
I think that where they went wrong was, I mean, clearly what MCA would do are recommendations and determinations. If they make recommendations on medical necessity, the level of care, the duration of care, the frequency of the care, they make determinations on appropriateness of payments. I mean, exactly what MCOs do are make recommendations and terminations to the Bureau of Workers' Comp and to to the workers.
But when those words are used, when those words are used in consolidation with compensation, medical service, nursing, and hospital, do they not mean, or is it reasonable to say that they mean recommendations and determinations of examining physicians or other experts?
Well.
I mean, that's really what we're talking about when you get a recommendation from a staff-appointed physician.
Okay, and what I would say is I disagree that that's solely what they mean, but let's say they do mean a recommendation to a treating physician. We would all have to agree that a recommendation to a treating physician is not a direct benefit to a worker. I mean, a payment to a physician to conduct an IME is not a payment of a benefit to a worker.
Now, wait a minute. It's not a recommendation to a physician. It's a referral to a physician and a recommendation as to disability or medical impairment by the physician.
And exactly what I'm saying is that what that physician does, for which he's being paid for out of the state insurance fund, is not any kind of a compensation to an injured worker. So there's an exact example. There's a perfect example.
Well, but it's a medical service.
They're providing the medical service, you know, they're making a claim eligibility determination. They're not providing medical care. I mean, it's almost as if it's an adversarial situation. It's like an IME, you know, the individual's going to this doctor and saying, am I not eligible for these benefits? It's almost adversarial. It is not a medical service or medical care being provided of any kind. And in fact, if you look at statutorily, what the legislature has authorized for payments from the state insurance fund, they've authorized exactly that. Payments to physicians that are for IMEs, those are not medical services, those are not medical benefits. They've authorized payments for actuarial benefits, or mean actuarial audits of the fund. That certainly cannot be argued that it is a direct benefit to a worker. Those are legislatively authorized payments from the state insurance fund. And what I would say is when you analyze those types of payments, IME payments, and you talk about IMEs and you talk about paying accountants, certainly those services are much less medical need oriented and much less related to directly paying benefits to workers than the medical management services being provided by MCO.
Well, stretch it, or if you interpret it to that degree, then can you think of anything that wouldn't be included?
Is anything that's not, that would have to be covered by the administrative assessment?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Rent, utilities, equipment, exactly what is currently considered to be administrative costs.
Would that be the words, and for no other purpose?
Pardon me?
The words of the statute are, and for no other purpose, other than what's delineated in the statute.
In 41.330, yes. And if you look at the budgets which are submitted, which are the administrative costs, payroll, utility, rent, maintenance, fuel, supplies, copies, equipment, those are administrative costs. Those are your typical overhead costs, which have always been paid from an administrative assessment. But
and not out of the fund.
And not out of the fund. That's correct. But that's not what MCOs are doing. MCOs are medically managing claims. And in fact, it's hard to argue that it's not an integral component of our current workers' comp system. I mean, even in the Haley decision, there was a statement that MCOs are integral to the workers' compensation system. I mean, I think that has to be, you know, they're making medical necessity recommendations and determinations. They're assisting in ensuring the quality of care that is being provided by the credentialing of their networks. They're involved in recommendations on conditions. I mean, they're pre-authorizing care. They're assisting in the dispute levels. I mean, they're very intricately involved in our current workers' comp system.
The 10th District opinion seemed to roll the determination that this was a constitutionally impermissible expenditure of the funds, together with a statement that there is no clear statutory authorization to do it this way. It's a little unclear to me if there were specific statutory authorization, whether or not the outcome would have been the same. Are they correct in their analysis that there is, at the time this was enacted, there was no specific statutory authorization for the expenditure of these funds in this manner?
And just like I agree, when I read that decision, I mean, you know, they say they address the constitutional issue, but then there's these discussions about statutory authority.
It's all rolled together almost in the same sentence.
Yeah, exactly. That it makes it appear that if they felt stronger about statutory authority, the case may have turned out differently.
Do you dispute that there was no specific statutory authorization?
Yes, I do dispute that. And we believe that there is statutory authority in 4121-441, which was...
Your explanation of statutory authority is going back and finding that in something that was already on the books before this whole scheme was created.
We believe there's two elements. 412330 would be what was on the books. 412441 A, which was what was enacted with the HPP program, was enacted, which said Bureau can promulgate rules to pay MCOs, essentially is what it said. And they promulgate a rule that says MCOs will be paid a percentage of the employer's premium. That's the premium that goes into the state insurance fund. So we believe that, yes, there is statutory authority. The legislature said promulgate rules to pay them. They promulgate rules to pay them out of the state insurance fund. And again, this was a system that was designed with all the stakeholders at the table.
Would you not rely on A4 also for that argument? Appropriate financial incentives to reduce service costs and ensure proper system utilization without sacrificing service?
That's exactly...
That'd be another, I would think, another specific direction, wouldn't it not be?
That absolutely is. It is A4, which is said, you know, to, without sacrificing the quality of the care, come up with the system that gave them the statutory authority. And I believe, you know, the Court of Appeals really never considered that part of the law as the statutory authority, which I clearly think that it is. And that was enacted at the same time as the HPP.
If we decide you're correct that the Court of Appeals did not apply the Thompson standard, and it appears that they didn't because it didn't, there's no mention of that standard, should we remand the case to the Court of Appeals to apply the standard, or should we apply it here?
I think it would be applied here. I think that the Thompson standard would be applied here. That would be our position.
Counsel, with the exception of the exempted boxes, if MCOs did not perform this function, would not you have to go back internally and hire everybody internally inside the Bureau to perform the function?
Well, these are services that have never been done by the Bureau, and I don't even know whether you could do that. I think the reason that we came up with the system that we came up with is because this was the best way to do it, and that is outsourcing to third parties. In fact, that's how it was done prior to the MCOs. And there's, even in the AMLIT case, there's a discussion of contracting utilization review services to outside third parties that were being paid for out of the state insurance fund. Blue Cross Blue Shield was conducting utilization review. Health Pro is doing utilization review, so all of that is being contracted out to third parties and being paid out of the state insurance fund, the exact thing that the MCOs are currently doing. Could you hire people and try to get it in the Bureau? I don't even know whether that's feasible and, whether that can even be done. This is clearly the best way, and I think the results of this system have proven it to be the best way. I know there's some concern that we're going to challenge, that this is going to jeopardize the solvency of the fund. The facts are clearly the opposite. Fund is stronger than it's ever been. Surplus is larger. Claims are processed more efficiently. The quality of the services are better. Workers are returning to work quicker. I mean, this is a system which is working. And, the facts are completely contrary to any suggestion that the solvency of the fund is in jeopardy by this. The fund is working better than it ever has as a result of this system.
If we affirm the Court of Appeals, I take it from the briefs that the so-called administrative fund, to which the employers pay a premium or some sort of an allocation of funds, that then would be the fund from which these expenses would be paid. Is that right? Or
I think that would probably be the route that they would have to try to go. I mean, I don't know that is the route that they would go, but that is, I mean, could they possibly do this assessment as an administrative assessment? Is it possible? I suspect that it's possible, but what the Bureau has indicated, it is that, one, don't believe legally we have to do it, but
right.
It would be very, very difficult to implement the system. You would have to first address, if we're going to do it as an administrative assessment, then it's a budget line item and it's part of the state accounting and payment system. So you have to first address the issue of, you have to bid this out. So now you have to bid this out to all these MCOs, or could you get a waiver from the controlling board?
Well, as I read the Appellee's argument, the Appellee's are not saying that this service should not be called a service, for lack of a better term, that these activities should be discontinued, but that they're being paid for from the wrong source of funds. Isn't that, that's the only issue, is it not?
That is the only issue.
As far as you see it.
That's the only issue.
Thank you, Mr. Dolley.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Please, the Court. The issue presented in this case this morning involves the constitutionally permissible use of the State Insurance Fund, a trust fund created pursuant to Article 2, Section 35, for the purpose expressed therein of providing compensation to workers and their dependents for injury, disease, and death occasioned in the course of employment.
And your learned adversary, Mr. Bowman, has just told us that this all is complete benefit to the workers, that it's become a utopia because of this. And why are you here complaining? It seems to me that it helps your people, not hurts them.
We are not here, Your Honor, to debate whether the Health Partnership Program is a good program, whether it's working the way it was intended, or what its future will be. As Chief Justice Moyer's question indicated, the issue in this case is whether the payment of up to 6% of the premium revenue contributed to the state fund by the employers of this state to managed care organizations for medical management and cost containment services, which we submit are in essence administrative services, which in fact the rules describe as administrative services, whether those payments can properly be made from the trust fund.
As a practical matter, I guess I have a hard time understanding why the union came to the table and agreed to all of this and now challenging it. There seems to be a real problem there. But if you won't let the insurance fund, respect your argument, pay it, and it goes to administration, doesn't it still come out of the same pocket? I mean, the employer gets perhaps another reduction in their insurance fund premium and pays more in their administrative cost premium. It seems to me that it still comes out of the employer's pocket.
But historically, we have always had a delineation between costs of compensation, which under Article 2, Section 35 and 4123.30 could be paid from the trust fund, and administrative costs, which pursuant to 4123.341 and 342 are paid from a separate and distinct administrative cost assessment.
But do you agree that they still all come out of the employer's pocket?
Yes, and I suppose ultimately it all comes from the consumers. But still, we have historically had the separation of funds.
You're shifting simply from one fund to another to say that, I mean, HALIS already found the Constitution, that's beyond debate. So you're basically challenging source attainment, and all that could happen if we ruled in favor of you, your client, is you shift the fund from one side to the other, and one payment goes down and the other goes up.
Well, that's not necessarily all that would happen, because as Mr. Dolly indicated, if this has to be paid from the administrative cost assessment or from some funding mechanism other than the trust fund, then there is some legislative oversight over the cost of this program. At this point, there is
legislative oversight, or did you have a
It is the legislature which has the ultimate authority to determine the terms and conditions of payment, and it is the legislature which sets the budget that Mr. Dahl referred to, which approves the budget.
Why did the union originally agree to this?
I'm sorry?
Why did the union originally agree to this if they thought it was unconstitutional?
There were a number of stakeholder groups which participated in meetings in the formulation of the Health Partnership Program. I don't believe that the appellees in this case individually were among those groups. I would also submit that this process of stakeholder meetings is certainly not legally binding and certainly does not have the effect of waiving a constitutional defect where one exists. On only one prior occasion, since the fund was created in 1913, has this court been squarely confronted with the question of whether an administrative or operational expense incurred in the running of the workers' compensation system can be paid in the trust fund. That occasion was the corrugated container case decided in 1960. And the answer that this court gave in that case was no part of the state insurance fund, which is a trust for the benefit of employers and employees for the payment of compensation awards, can be used for administrative purposes.
The case didn't really say that, did it, counsel? I mean, it said that it couldn't be transferred to the general fund. And I thought that the case really stood for the proposition that funds could not be diverted from the salutary purpose of funding claims and medical benefits for workers.
Justice Cook, the precise transfer at issue, which was invalidated by this court's opinion in corrugated container, was a payment from the state insurance fund to the general revenue fund,
right,
of an amount equal to one-third of the biennial administrative costs of the Bureau and the Commission, precisely the amount of such costs that the general revenue fund is obligated under 4123.341 and 342 to pay. So it is not a question, I submit, of the legislature having attempted in corrugated container to take workers' compensation trust fund monies and transfer them for completely unrelated non-workers' compensation purposes. Indeed, I would submit that this is the critical distinction between corrugated container and Thompson.
And would the significant distinction be the word choice by the court in Thompson about an integral component, something that integrally related to the workers' comp program
I think not, Your Honor, and I'd like to explain why I think not. What was at issue in Corrugated Container was the funding of the operation of the Bureau of Workers' Compensation in the Industrial Commission.
And that would have been things like rent, as we talked about. Rent, things
paying
like that.
Paying the rent, paying right. the utilities, paying the employees who processed the claims,
sure.
who received the bills, who reviewed the bills, who released them for payment.
Plainly administrative.
Mm-hmm. Which are now being performed by managed care organizations, but which were formerly performed by Bureau employees. There is scarcely anything more integral to the operation of the workers' compensation system than having the Bureau and the Commission open for business so that claims can be processed, orders can be written, premiums can be received,
actually,
benefits can be paid.
But that could be argued to be a bit remote from the actual medical payment of claims and medical assessment.
It's really not remote, Your Honor, because the people whose salaries were being paid out of the administrative cost fund were the people who received the bills, reviewed the bills, paid the bills, wrote the orders, wrote the checks. Many of those same things which are now being done by MCO employees. When this administrative duty shifted to the MCOs, the other thing that shifted was the cost of having that service performed. Now, instead of coming from administrative costs to pay the state employees who do that work, it comes out of the trust fund. Now, the difference, Mr. Chief Justice, you questioned whether the Court of Appeals addressed the Thompson standard. I would submit, Your Honor, that it did, and that it distinguished the Thompson case. And it did so in a manner that was precisely consistent with the position of the athletes in this matter.
May I ask one other question, counsel? The other significant question is that this court has approved as constitutional certain other, what I would think are fairly analogous expenses that we've already talked about today, like independent medical examinations. How do you,
Your Honor,
if you say that's, if that's not administrative, or is it? I mean,
Your Honor, I would submit, first of all, that I disagree that this court has specifically approved such expenditures as constitutional. There are two cases in the history of this system which raise these issues. One is Corrugated Container, which explicitly dealt with administrative costs and explicitly said you can't pay them from this pocket. The other is Thompson. The syllabus law in Thompson is very clear and it's very narrow. The transfer of investment income derived from the state insurance fund to the Disabled Workers Relief Fund does not violate 235 or 228. That is all that was held. This court has not previously been presented with an opportunity or occasion to specifically pass upon the constitutionality of other uses of the state insurance fund for allegedly non-compensatory purposes, and has not done so.
I would like to hear your best argument on why HALIC would not control. HALIC found the entire system constitutional. I don't see any carving out which says it's constitutional except for some other areas in town. So where do you find in HALIC the out that lets something else be challenged on it that you've already ruled on?
In HALIC, this court rejected arguments that appellees made in the lower court with respect to the delegation of administrative functions over the state insurance fund to private entities and the delegation to the private sector of the ability to make certain determinations with respect to terms and conditions of payment or rights of injured workers. No place in HALIC was the issue of the use of the state insurance fund for the purpose of paying for the services rendered by managed care organizations raised, discussed, or ruled upon.
So we vote it's okay to delegate this, but not okay to pay.
The question of payment was not raised in the HALIC case, Your Honor, and it wasn't decided because it wasn't raised.
Why is it implicitly there?
Well, as Corrugated Container teaches us, not every expense related to workers' compensation constitutes a proper expenditure of the state insurance fund under 235 or 4123.30. If the test were, as the appellant suggests, that anything which is necessary to some integral component of the workers' compensation system is fair game for payment from the state insurance fund, why, for more years than anyone in this room has been alive, has 4123.30 so explicitly and so clearly said you can use this fund for these compensatory purposes, for compensation, for benefits, for medical, hospital, surgical, nursing, rehabilitation services, for life losses sustained on account of injury, disease, or death, and for no other purpose?
Maybe you just haven't had time to do it yet, but why would we look at Halet or Thompson or corrugated? Why wouldn't you just go to the law that applies here? Didn't they pass a rule, 4123-6-13, that makes it clear what this is?
Well, I think there's a question,
says the Bureau shall pay an MCO an administrative fee. That's their own language.
And that is language adopted by the Bureau.
Now, that's what I mean.
But first of all, we look at corrugated container because it tells us that there is a constitutional dimension to this question of the proper uses of the state insurance fund, that it cannot be used for administrative purposes.
And that's my point. You know the old axiom that we're not going to decide a constitutional issue if we can avoid it. Do you have to decide Article 2, Section 35, when you have 4123-6-13 as a rule promulgated pursuant to 441?
I think that you do, Your Honor, because there is really, if one assumes for purposes of argument that the General Assembly has the constitutional authority to authorize the present use of the state insurance fund for these purposes, the fact remains they haven't done so. They didn't amend 4123.30. 441 never mentions the word payment, never mentions the word managed care organization. It says that the Bureau shall promulgate rules and that those rules shall include provisions to provide appropriate financial incentives. To whom? It doesn't say to managed care organizations. It doesn't say to providers.
Well, it says to reduce service costs and ensure proper system utilization without sacrificing the quality of service. Doesn't that suggest that what the intention of the legislature is, and that with respect to this program?
I would submit, Your Honor, that that's ambiguous at best, and it does not constitute a clear legislative direction to pay those fees or incentives from the state insurance fund as opposed to another funding source that is not subject to the constitutional and statutory restrictions imposed upon the state insurance fund.
You've used your time, Mr. Bowman.
I have indeed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Dawley, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I just want to make three quick comments. First of all, the MCO services were not formally provided by the Bureau. Those were not services that were previously performed, and there's some recognition of that in data when they talk about the outsourcing and utilization review. It's also in the record in this case, the deposition of Doug Major talks about MCO services. What they're doing was not performed by the Bureau. That's in the record.
Mr. Dolly, let me stop you. Mr. Bowman says that 441A4, indeed it does, of course, say that there should be appropriate financial incentives, but doesn't say from which fund they're paid. What's your response?
I acknowledge it doesn't say from which fund it is to be paid, but it does make reference to it in the Administrative Code Section 613, that the payments will be from the premiums paid by the employers into the state insurance.
Counsel, going clear back to corrugated, it looks to me like the court was struggling with somewhat the same thing that the district was struggling with, and that was the lack of a specific statutory authorization for what was done. If Isn't that the same problem with 10th District found here, and is that correctable by simply, at least does that put the case in the totally different posture by simply enacting the statute that specifically authorizes what the commission attempted to do by rule?
Again, my response to that, Justice Piper, is that we believe there is authority. We believe it's pretty clear. It says in the rule they'll be paid out by a percentage of the premium from the fund that the employer is paying. If it was clear, obviously it would be easier if the statute was maybe, if there was express statute which said it will be paid out of the state.
Sure. And corrugated court does almost the same thing the 10th District did, sort of fold together the absence of specific statutory authorization, finding absent that, it was constitutionally impermissible to make the expenditure.
And again, I agree exactly with what you're saying. We don't think corrugated is controlling here because we believe that, these are administrative costs. Well, certainly what MCOs are doing in the year 2000 was never before scored in 1960 before corrugated. Times have changed, medical care has changed, the process has changed. But what I would say is,
well, corrugated didn't have the Corrugated didn't have the Thompson test.
Corrugated didn't have Thompson.
Before Thompson, so we have to look, I guess, if we want to keep the test, we have to look at the test in Thompson and decide whether, how it applies. Isn't that your argument?
I agree absolutely. And in Thompson, these non-benefit payments were directly before the Thompson. Were before the Thompson, they were aware of them, they considered them, they reviewed them, they expressly noted them and put them and said, We approve. These are integral components of the workers' compensation program. So,
you've used your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.